Blog Talk Radio.
Brother, there's far too many of you.
evening, everyone, and welcome to another Friday night's edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host, and just moments ago, I took my notes and I threw them all up in the air because tonight our lead story is so real that I don't think we need notes. I think the story about the missing Nigerian girls, I think it really makes things real in terms of just how bad our world is at, the state that we're in right now. And the fact that in broad daylight, you know, 300 girls can just disappear and nobody see anything just blows my mind. It's kind of like the missing plane weeks ago. And so it just really speaks to shows like mine. And I think that everyone has got to at some point come to the realization that either we speak up now and get involved or things like this will continue to happen. And I think it's no mistake that we can have a plane go missing and we don't have enough outcry to make the governments speak up and say what really happened. So when they got away with that, then the next thing you know, 300 Nigerian girls come up missing. So it's now or never, you know, because what do we do? Wait until something happens to us and our families, and then we want the world to have an outcry for us. I think we got to do more. AJ Houston, good evening. I'm going to get off my soapbox this evening, but, you know, I was preparing my notes for this show, and I just said, listen, I don't need notes for this one. This is just too real. How are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderful. Yourself, Carrie?
You know, AJ, I'm emotional about this one. And, you know, listen, y'all, a couple of years ago, Dick Gregory did this show. He did the show a couple of times. But, you know, after the show, we talked, and he says, listen, you get too emotional with these shows. He says, you know, it ain't your story. You're just the storyteller. And so I've been holding on to that. Every time I come on the air, you know, I'll just hold on real tight that, you know, Dick Gregory said, this ain't my story. I'm just a storyteller. But when you tell stories like this, AJ, is so real. When week after week we keep doing stories that just don't make any sense anymore. The missing plane didn't make any sense. Now the missing Nigerian girls don't make any sense. Where does it end?
But Carrie, that story was on, I saw it on Facebook weeks ago, and mm-hmm. I was clicking on the page, whatever sex scandal was out, whatever was happening on some show, everybody have hundreds of hits, and I saw that and had no hits, so, and I was trying to, I put on each page, I said, I really appreciate you for keeping the story out there. I said, but it's too real for anybody to click on. They won't comment on because they don't know what to say. They won't click like on it because they want to sit down and enjoy their day. They think it's all about fun. And I really think that's the problem is we think everything, we think we're supposed to be happy. Everything's supposed to be about fun. Like we have no other purpose in this life but to, you know, but like what was the song? Don't worry, be happy, you know. And that's not the case.
You know, I started off, we had audio problems, but, y'all, this is live radio, so it happens. I started off this show with the song Money, 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 but it wouldn't come up. But listen, it's so appropriate for this show. You know why I was going to start off with Money, Money, Money? Because in researching for this show is when I found out this is about money. This ain't about, because, you know, I was telling a friend of mine yesterday, I said, when do people kidnap black kids? It don't happen, y'all. But, you know, listen, I've never in history heard of a black person being kidnapped. They don't kidnap us. So why would they go and kidnap 300? It's about money. And that's when I, in researching for this show, realized that right now, oil-rich Nigeria this year passed South Africa and Egypt to become the continent's wealthiest nation this year. So it's about oil, y'all. It's about oil. And it's sad that these three girls are caught in the middle, but that's what I think is about, AJ. It's about oil.
Well, the thing is, you know, you can't leave out there's gold, there's diamonds, yeah. There's everything there. But I think what it is see, I did another radio show, and we were talking about sex trafficking, you know, the mm-hmm. trafficking of women and girls and how they were being taken from all over the world. But mm-hmm. they were only taking a couple at a time, so it was kind of hard to pinpoint where it was going or what was happening. But see, this was like somebody said, we're not going to go through this process too many more times. We're going to get everything we need right now. And so, because they stole it in broad daylight, and they just took them, and the family was out crying, and no nation, I didn't hear any nation saying anything about it for the longest.
You know what? In researching for this show, and I got a lot of my research all from the Chicago Tribune, and they had a great article on this story, but do you know that they say basically President Goodluck Jonathan, who's the president of Nigeria, basically he was preparing for basically this summit over there. It's called the World – I'm sorry, I'm looking for my notes on that. But it was a summit that was coming – a forum that was coming up over there. So he didn't have time to do – oh, it's called the World Economic Forum. So President Jonathan was preparing for the World Economic Forum. So he didn't have time to deal with these 300 girls. So originally they put out a story that all of the girls had been rescued except for 8. Only later to retract it and say none of them had been rescued. You know, some of them had managed to escape, but none of them had been rescued. Now, why would a government put out a story like that?
Well, because if you want people to come to your, if you need people to come to your nation, to come to your place, you don't want them to think that they're not safe. So if
that's
we can hush the story for this week or whatever, you know, just kill down the media for a second. I'm saying it happens all the time. If you remember when Ron Brown's plane went down, there was a lot of other stories popped up, so that story didn't pop up till later. The details didn't pop up till later because it was like, we can keep this story hushed by bringing something else in the media. And it's done all the time. We just don't pay attention to it.
I mean, basically, they said that a day after the attack, a day after, y'all, the country's military announced that all but 8 of the girls had been rescued. They soon retracted the statement saying that none of the girls had been rescued, although 50 had escaped. Okay, so he was so busy getting ready for his forum that he would put, I mean, a hush-hush on that thing so tight that he made people think that it was okay. Why did he do that? I mean,
well,
really was
to make everybody feel safe that was coming to the summit. I'm
true,
saying it's evident because it happens more times than not, more times than it's brought up in the media, because what happens is the next big story comes up.
Well, they said that the World Economic Forum that President Jonathan was preparing for was expected to attract billions of new investment dollars to Nigeria, where basically their economy had grew 6.7% in 2012, boosted by an e-commerce, telecommunications, music, and what they call Nollywood, their country's bustling movie industry over there. So let's just say Nigeria is doing pretty good compared to the rest of us. So is this what I just
– No, you saying what? Is it what?
And so is that what this is about? Is it about, like, okay, you know, are we really looking – as a matter of fact, let me clarify. I was on Facebook, and I was making some comments about why hadn't this Nigerian president reached out for help sooner. And an African brother of mine on Facebook, and if he's listening tonight, I hope he calls in, he said, hey, I can't believe you're so naive. He said, you know, basically the gist of his comment was whenever the West intervenes, basically they don't just intervene, they take over. And so basically the Nigerians were afraid to ask the West for help in fear that if they did, it would be like the West typically does. They'll come in, you know, bearing gifts and support and assistance, and then the next thing you know, you've been captured.
Oh, they pass out those blankets like they did earlier, huh?
And I had to really think about what he said, because in my mind I'm thinking 300 girls are missing. If you can't handle it, then get yourself some help. But when he said what he said the way he said it, I couldn't say anything, but
sense,
I understand. Because you know, the best indicator of future behavior is past behavior. So if we have a history of taking over once we get there, you can't blame people for being leery of asking us for assistance.
But see, the thing is, Carrie, is a lot of times we can toss up any excuse, and it sounds, you know, any excuse sounds in the realm of logic. But this is about life. This isn't about attitudes and, you know, perception and what's going to happen later. This is about recovery now. And and I think that's the issue is that we put so little impact, so little level of importance on the missing of black children, even in American society, because you will see an Amber Alert go out quick.
Mm-hmm.
But usually the child isn't black that they're looking for.
Well, let
but
me
we don't say anything about it.
Speaking of that, then, Amber Alerts, as we do over here in the West, when a child goes missing that's under 18 or 16 or whatever the cutoff is, if this had been 300 Caucasian girls, European girls, would we have...
They would have made it far with them.
This is true. Now, you know what? The scary part about this whole story, y'all, is they said Amnesty International basically is charged Friday that Nigerian authorities knew the attack was coming as much as 4 hours before it occurred but did not act. Why did they not act? If they knew that this was going to happen, why did they not act? So was it a setup? Oh, no.
Well, you know, right now, there's so many things happening that people think it can go unnoticed. We can let this, you know, this one slide. Nobody noticed. Nobody pay attention. Because, as I'm saying, just like the story we did last week, it wasn't a big story until the media got a hold of it and started making it sound like they even changed the wording and changed some other things to make it sound like this, and everybody else didn't look at the story. They just started repeating what they heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually the way it works.
You know, they were saying that, ironically, President Jonathan's efforts to downplay the kidnapping might have worked better in days just before Nigeria became a global economic power. So just recently, here they are, considered like a global economic power. So is the timing suspect? Is it that all of a sudden, you know, they hit the radar as being oil rich and, like you say, you know, diamonds and everything else over there and resources? Is it just coincidental that this happened when it happened? I think Jordan Maxwell taught me one thing when he's done this show a couple of times. There is no such thing as coincidence. They need to
slash
that.
No, I'm in agreement. I'm saying because, you know, I guess the point of the matter is a lot of times we will wait to see what somebody else says about something before we actually comment on it so we can get a little bit of their opinion added to ours so it sounds like we know what we're talking about.
I agree with that. You know, they're blaming this whole attack, basically, or these kidnappings on a group. But, you know, this group has not taken responsibility. So we're going to say alleged, you know, but they're saying that although that they haven't claimed responsibility, nearly all have pinned the kidnappings on Islamic extremist group Boko Haram, which had threatened to take young women captive almost a year ago. So when you got that much notice, a year in the making, and then you get a four-hour window that it's going to happen, why didn't somebody act?
Kara, I'm leery because what I learned by doing, you know, because I've been helping you on the show for a long time, and I had another couple of shows we were doing, but what I learned is, like, the first lie is always the truth until people find out it's a lie.
That's true. I mean, because, you know, I agree. See, this is what I think. I think whoever this Boko Haram is, they said that this isn't the first time that this particular group has acted. So if that's the case and they have a track record and they make a threat, shouldn't you at least take the threat, you know, to some degree to be serious enough that you put some parameters in place that, you know, if it does happen, then we're going to make sure that, you know, we're going to safeguard whoever it is that they're threatening. I mean, because I'm looking for my notes on it. They did this before, earlier this year, and I think some people were killed. I think 29 were killed. I'm looking for my notes on it. But it just looks like this particular group, they have some extreme ways of thinking about Western education. It's all about Western education. They don't believe in it.
Yes. But you know, and see, I think America is getting part of that concept going, because we have the so-called freedom of.
I'm sorry, did we lose you, AJ? I think AJ has phone problems. I don't know why he always gets dropped. We're going to see in a second if AJ comes back.
I didn't get dropped, did I?
Okay, there you go. I thought we dropped. Say what?
No, I was saying I almost made my whole point, too.
We didn't hear it.
Now, I was saying the problem is a lot of times when we look at it, just like in America, we would take our time to comment on anything, but we will try and make sure that, okay, is it going to be safe, or do I want this person to speak their mind even if I don't agree with them? So if you don't agree, we try and make it to where that person can't even say anything about what they believe in anymore.
Wow. Here we go, and I got my numbers wrong, y'all. They were saying at least 1,200 people are estimated to have died in Boko Haram violence and the Nigerian military security crackdown this year alone. This year alone. I mean, this is no joke. And then they said that Nigerian leaders should have been prepared because Boko Haram, whose name in Hausa language roughly means Western education is sinful, has turned school attendance into a death-defying risk in recent years, and not only for girls. A similar raid on another Northeast regional boarding school killed 29 teenage boys in February. So did they? It's just April. So they had a heads up, AJ, that there was a problem. You know, I don't know. I'm just, and I guess I'm emotional tonight, y'all, because the people look like me. You know, I'm African American, and I know one thing in my whole lifetime, and you know, I'm a little past 20. I've never known a black person to be kidnapped. Not a black girl, not a black boy to be kidnapped. So, because they typically know we don't have no ransom money. So why waste time, you know, kidnapping us? So does that speak volumes when they use the term kidnapping to begin with, and not, you know, that they kill these girls or they sold the girls? Doesn't the term kidnapping raise suspicion to you?
Kidnapping means that they know what they want in return for whoever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually they wait on the ransom, we wait on the call to what they want. We know they want something because we have something they want.
Well, this is what was ridiculous, and I'm not going to name what religious show that I heard this on, but this week I heard a religious show, and they were saying, they were saying how they were praying for these girls, which I am myself am praying for the girls as well. But they say, you know, that these kidnappers are threatening to sell the girls. Well, the money that they're talking about selling these girls are like pennies on the dollar. I mean, for us over here, it's nothing. I think it equates to, like, I don't know, maybe $100-something. And I thought, that doesn't make any sense. When I read the whole story about Nigeria being oil rich, you know, and all of that, and I'm thinking, surely it ain't about $120 times 300 girls. I'm not that stupid. And so that made me believe that this particular pastor, he didn't understand the whole story. Because if Nigeria is half as rich as this Chicago Tribune is reporting, it's not about them selling the girls for $120. You see what I'm saying, AJ? That's ridiculous.
No, I'm with you, but that's the point I was making earlier, is that whatever anybody say, they're waiting for somebody to see. As long as somebody's in agreement, I think, you know, in the Bible it says when two or more in agreement, it, you know, that makes it so, basically. And I think that applies to whatever story they're telling.
You probably.
I really hate to say that, but But that's the way I see it, because I hear it all the time, and I think it's usually, I'm not going to say, you know, church folk or pastors, but it's usually somebody in the religious community that says something that everybody in particular religious communities will begin to agree with. And then when it's repeated, it almost makes it truth because you've heard it enough to think it's true.
And that's true. And then you know what? If you respect someone's opinion, a lot of times they may say something that sounds totally ridiculous to you, but because they said it, you think, well, it must be some truth to it because so-and-so said it. You know, and so yeah. When this person, you know what I mean? You see where I'm going with that?
Oh, like, yeah, pastor
said it. You know, pastor would know. Pastor don't get stuff wrong. And so when this particular person said that, I thought, and they were taking up an offering. So you go buy the girls back. I mean, that's just, you know.
Wait, Carrie. They were taking up an offering for what?
They were taking up the offering so they could buy the girls back, I guess. I don't know. I was thinking, now what's the offering for? So, and this was a TV ministry. But, it is what it is. And I got confused with it. I thought, are you taking up the money because you're going to buy the girls back from the kidnappers, or are we taking up the offering to build your ministry?
I'm not easily confused, Carrie, but you are confusing me.
I'm just telling you what happened, AJ. They took up an offering. They were telling people to give. Never waste a good Christ.
You got to start back over with that, because evidently I missed something or something in there that.
Okay, let me start again. And, yeah, I'm not the best storyteller, so I'm going to do the best I can. I'm watching this TV ministry that I like a lot, and they're talking about we got to do something because these girls are missing. And I was like, well, yeah, that's, you know, he was asking everybody to pray, and I was like, you know, yeah, I'm going to pray for him. That's a good thing. And then he said, you know, he started talking about the kidnappers were going to sell the girls and that they typically sold the girls, I believe, if I remember the number correct, to be something like $120 a girl. So he was like, we need to give tonight. We need to give. I'm sorry, AJ. It's hard to say it with a straight face, but he did. He said, we need to give tonight because we want to get our girls back. And I thought, well, what's he going to do with the money? Is he saying he's going to take the money to go buy the girls back, or is he going to take the money to build the ministry? I don't know. Listen, it didn't become clear to me by the end of the program. Let's just say I couldn't tell if we was going to send money in to buy the girls back, or we was taking and sending money in to build the ministry.
Okay, so it's all right that I'm still confused, but it's all right now because I understand why I'm confused, because I would still be confused if you told it again.
You know what? I'm going to tell you like this. I think it was meant to leave you in a state of confusion, so you just send it and don't worry about where it's going. So anyway, moving on. But that's what I heard this week, and I was kind of, you know, thinking give until I realized, well, give to what? Because you can't go to Boko Haram and say, hey, we got $120 times 300 girls, so therefore we want you to, you know, it doesn't work like that. So that's
Now, Carrie, you probably didn't hear the message or hear the drums play. If you just heard the whole message and when the drums started playing, you'd already called in and donated your money.
You know what? I was pretty caught up for a minute till I got to thinking, now you're going to do what with the $120? I didn't know. And you know, the thing is, and I'm not bashing ministry because I know it takes money to build ministries. I do. But I just think sometimes ministries, if you're not careful, they will have you giving, emotional giving, to situations that what you're giving for will never be, changed by, let's just say that. And I'm moving on. I'm going to get out of that. But anyway, I'm getting off subject. I'm going to dig out of that one.
I thought you were going to the 20-year building fund and all other stuff. I'm sorry.
No, my tires are getting stuck in that one. I'm backing out. But that's just something I heard this week in relation to this story. But I think one thing I was amazed by, because, you know, here our kids are always skipping school or dropping out of school or, you know, not getting their education when they go to school. And one thing I found very courageous about this story is that they said that the children and the parents were so into education there that they were risking their life to send their kids to these schools. I mean, that they knew that these threats had been when put out there. But at the same time, they still wanted to risk even life so that their kids had the opportunity to get an education so, you know, they could have a better life. Isn't that scary? That, you know,
now,
you
why
have
are you on
to
that, Carrie? This week I did a couple of workshops at a middle school here in the Fort Worth area.
Okay.
And it took me a minute to actually get – it was only like three or four of the students that was causing a problem for
the rest.
15 or 16 of the students that was in the workshop. So I started explaining to them. I said, there are people all over the world that don't have access to getting an education, that don't have – If they don't have enough teachers. They don't have all these things that you have. And I say, eventually we're going to have to understand that people can tell you whatever. Anybody comes to the school, they come to help you. Nobody comes to make it seem like they're trying to do anything wrong to you, because this is education is paramount. You need education. Even if you want to just wash dishes, you need a GED.
That's true. And, you know, that's the sad part about this story, is that when we think of education over here, you know, we have all these numbers for this amount dropped out and this amount graduated and this amount went to college and this amount never went to college. And we're talking about kids who walk miles and miles to get to school and then are in danger of death from some extremist just because they want to better themselves through education. That's pretty sad in comparison to what we see here in the West, but it happens every day over there, obviously, in Nigeria. And kids have been killed, and now you have 300 that are kidnapped or were kidnapped, and 50, like I said, escaped. So, you know, imagine the 50 that was smart enough to escape. And this is where I'm at today, y'all. If the plane has a hijacker...
Where was Tubman when they started escaping, huh?
Huh?
Where was Tubman when they started escaping?
What was what?
Where was Tubman? You know, because she said she wouldn't leave anybody behind.
Right. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And she said if anybody wanted to turn around and leave, she would have to shoot them because people would find them from their spot.
Yes. And, you know, the thing is, I think people have got to realize, and y'all, I'm just going to put that out there because this is my soapbox for real. Y'all better get some courage. I mean, I'm like one of these. I'm going to be the radical one in the group. You know, they say God knew when each of us, he foreknew us before the beginning. I would have been Kunta Kinte. I just know it. My mouth would have got me in trouble and my foot would have been cut off a long time ago. So... ain't nothing changed. I mean, seriously.
So you wasn't going to never be Toby then. You wasn't going to never be Toby.
No.
I'm just checking. I'm just asking. You know, I'm just inquiring. Inquiring minds want to know.
And I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you. This is the way I think. If you get on the plane and they say somebody trying to kidnap you, you better go into survival mode. Don't be sitting back there thinking, okay, I'm going to be the one that ain't going to say nothing, and I'm going to be the one to survive because I don't say nothing. That's crazy thinking today. And I think these 50 courageous girls that were smart enough to get out of there, they are smart. I mean, and the run, and I'm not saying that it was possible for all 300 to escape, but I'm saying it took some courage for those 50 to say, you know what, we'd rather die trying to get up out of here than to stay and deal with whatever's coming. And so I think today you just got to get courage. I don't know, you know, I don't know sometimes what people are thinking when they think that just sitting quietly by is going to make things get better. Today we're going into a different time. You got to change your way of thinking. Every day is survivor mode to me, AJ. I mean, seriously, what we're living in today, every day feels like episode of Good Times. When James would come in and he was always grinding and he never could get ahead, that's what it feels like to me. Every day is survivor mode. You agree with that?
I've been feeling that way, Carrie. You finally catching up?
Maybe. Maybe.
That's been my modus operandi from jump.
Hello. I'm just telling people, it's a different time. If you sit down and you play that victim role, you're probably going to get rolled over. I mean, in all seriousness, we are in a different time. I mean, and I'm sorry, y'all, if you just tuned in, you've come center stage tonight. We're talking about Bring Back Our Girls. That's the hashtag that has taken social media by storm. It's about the 300 kidnapped Nigerian girls, 50 escaped, some, I don't know, extremists, terrorists, whatever you want to call them, went in about 3 weeks ago and kidnapped those girls in broad daylight from a boarding school in Nigeria. And the world is outraged by it. There's celebrities weighing in saying, real men don't buy girls. And you know, the First Lady has even weighed in on it, saying, bring back our girls. And you know, the thing is, How do you kidnap 300 without it being an inside job? I mean, you agree with that, AJ? How do you do that without it being an inside job?
I'm saying you definitely have to know where everybody is, that nobody else is around that's going to stop you and all the other things. But, see, my one question is, if they tried it before, you didn't try to find them after that first time they tried it. See, my thing is, why are they still out there giving out these messages? Because if you remember, Even President Bush II was mm-hmm. chasing the Taliban and chasing terrorists and chasing these people because he said, we're not going to let you go out here and scare the people. We're not going to let you go out here and say all these things and not try and find you and not stop you from saying it and not stop you from hurting people. Mm-hmm. So if they did it before, at some point in time, they say, these people need to be either locked up or we need to find them so they can't harm our citizens anymore.
Hmm. But see, you know, this particular military, what do we know about the Nigerian military? They're not strong, right? I mean, they say they don't have any kind of track record on freeing hostages. So what do we know about the Nigerian military in terms of how strong?
But if they're military, I'm saying you can actually go find some people. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying don't wait till they capture when they say they're going to take somebody. Find them to stop them from taking anybody at all. That's my point.
Well, you know,
so if you got somebody in your community, somebody, man, we're going to tear this church down, we're going to do this, you're going to say, wait a minute. I'm not going to wait until you tear the church down and say, oh, I know who said it, so I know who did it.
Listen, well, you know what?
Right here.
Go ahead, Finn.
The example I was going to give you, there's an NFL player that played with the San Francisco 49ers that was at the airport, and he gave a fake bomb threat. Now he's making a grip of money. I think he led the 49ers in sacks and stuff last year. But he may be out. Ain't no telling how long he's going to get locked up for because there's repercussions for those acts for him saying that. So that's my point. As far as somebody saying or somebody tried it before and somebody saying that they're going to do it again, that person has to be found because you don't want to wait to find that person after they did what they said they were going to do.
I agree. And, you know, the thing is, I think the military over there does not seem very strong, and I got to do more. And I apologize, y'all didn't have time to do research or didn't even think to research how strong this military is. But what the outcry has been so far is that they haven't done enough. And what we do know is that the parents and other volunteers who pursued the kidnappers, they pursued them into these dangerous Sambisa Forest reserves, came within 2 miles of the kidnapped girls, according to the Associated Press. Yet, pleas to the military for assistance were repeatedly rebuffed. So what kind of military lets volunteers and parents of the kidnapped children go and pursue the kidnappers all the way up to 2 miles, just 2 miles away from them, and the military doesn't step in and take it from there? What kind of military is that? Or is it something more to this, and the military has been told to stand down? You know, it just doesn't seem right.
You'd have to look at it both ways because, you know, there's two options. So it's one or the other.
Mm.
So to say which what it is without knowing exactly, you just have to throw those two options out there and see, you know, because I just find it hard that through the example of the Saudis before, you know, when they were having problems, America gave them some fighter planes so they could fly over there and test our weaponry out on whoever was challenging them or whoever was supposed to attack them. They gave the same thing to Israel. So when people were talking about attacking Israel, Israel was doing the same thing. So I'm saying it wasn't a counter-strike. It was a preventive measure. So I'm saying when somebody challenges and tries to attack a school and say that we killing children like they killed 19 before, they killed and 26, and they're doing all this, I'm saying those people have to be found. We don't have to wait till they come and get somebody else.
I agree. There has to be some
preventive measures in there when you know somebody's talking about attacking. It's just like America, you know, with NASA, I was listening to our phone call right now. You know, that's why my phone go in and out. You know, Homeland Security don't want me to have a whole conversation sometimes. But that's all right. That's right. But what I'm saying is they're listening in for a preventive measure.
Yeah.
The just in case scenario.
It ain't room. Listen, you ain't going to even get me going there tonight.
You don't have to go there. I'm just saying it because I was joking about this for like the last 6 or 7 years when my phone would cut off. So yeah. when the information finally came out that they were listening to all the phone calls, a friend of mine from Louisiana called me and said, man, I thought you was always joking about, you know, this line was not secure. They listened in. He said, man, they've been listening. I don't know how long they've been listening. How did you know? But to me it was a joke because that's where it felt all the time. You know how your phone would had a little static in the background, or you know, especially the earlier cell phones, like somebody else is on the line.
Oh yeah, or you listen, if they really on you, you hear the beep. So, but anyway, I won't go there with you tonight.
But I'm just talking about preventive measures.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you. I think they should have been preventative in this situation, because I think when someone has made a threat, it's one thing, but if the threat has been carried out once and then you do nothing, you know, I don't know. I mean, and then it happens again. The government is sort of negligent in not doing what they could to protect the people. That's just me, but I don't know.
I'm in agreement, but I'm saying at some point in time, if you just became one of the richest nations over there, that means you have money to buy or to pay for additional security, to pay for, you know, whatever type of satellites America got over here that finds whoever. So now you start investing in preventive measures that's not spying on the people, but able to keep communication going throughout the region of your nation. So you can't
just
have this money and do nothing with it. With money comes, you have to purchase technology in order to stay up on what's going on. Because this is a global thing now. It's no longer just America. It's no longer just national. You know, no longer just our area that we worry about.
I agree.
Everybody has a G5. Everybody has a G5 now where they can fly, you know, across the water, just on a flight plan.
Right. I agree. I think this particular president, I don't know much about President Goodluck Jonathan, other than, you know, what I've, you know, discovered in this particular story. But sounds like, you know, he's a brother if he's not careful. because what will happen is kind of like the story we did on the city in Mississippi, I forgot what the name of it was, where the Emmett Till Museum is. If you are not a strong enough leader, then someone will just come and conquer you. You know what I'm saying? And so we've seen pretty much the whole Middle East trample over this last year or so. And so if this particular president isn't strong and basically not fixing this particular situation, but definitely have him come off as not being very strong, he is definitely in danger of having his government overthrown. That's just my opinion. And we'll see in the coming months if that will happen. But I think he definitely better start doing better with this particular story. And, y'all, the hashtag on this one, if you go on Twitter, is Bring Back Our Girls. Like I said, if you go on, everybody's talking about these young women and how they were kidnapped and their mothers and some other advocates over there are really working hard to try to bring these girls home, and they should be. And I think our government, I kind of want to say they should get involved until that young African brother hit me up on Facebook and was like, are you naive or what? And so I just really have to wonder, is this really a good thing for us to get involved, or should this particular government, with all of their resources, be able to handle this on their own? What do you think, AJ?
Well, I think at some point in time, we cannot make everything a political issue.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a life and death issue. Sometimes it's a moral issue. And see, now we have, now we're making political issues moral issues.
So
borderline that we're walking on, even in this American society, we have all these issues to where you have one team has the rhetoric of we're gonna take all the rights you ever got back, or we're gonna overturn whatever was made it up in court years ago, whatever the Supreme Court agreed on. And the other one's saying, hey, let's work on some new issues. But I think we're making so many things a political issue that never was political. It was a moral issue, because when you have over 300 girls missing, it's about the girls. We can make it about something else. We can voice our opinion as about something else. But when is life going to have more value than your menial opinion?
I agree. And you know, the thing is, as far as the West is concerned, it's just kind of like, I just hate to see us always be looked at as when we intervene, we make things worse. You know, in some of these situations, maybe we should just let, you know.
Over there fixed everything, start building schools, and now they're back on their feet. Then they say, we hate y'all, we're over here. But y'all took the help.
You think the West should go over there and start building schools?
No, I'm saying, but that's what they did in Afghanistan and all these other places that they've been, because, you know, my son is in the Army. My daughter was a captain. She was so happy because she was over in Iraq. She has PTSD right now. She was over in Iraq, but what she was happy about, she said while they were there, it wasn't what they were showing on the news here. They were building roads and bridges and building schools and protecting villages. So that wasn't what was being shown. So when they started saying all these bad things about America, they took the help until they were.
Did we lose that show? See, y'all, they play with AJ's phone every week.
Oh, you can hear
they're me? Playing with AJ. Say what, AJ? We can hear you now.
Okay, I said they took the help until they could self-sustain themselves.
Right.
Then it came out that we hate America, we hate this, you know, they came over here and did this, but all that wasn't the problem while they were guarding you, while they were protectors of your community, of your neighborhood, and building schools and roads so you can actually transfer, and trying to get the women rights over there, because that was the main thing, they were trying to get women rights so women could actually get a job, women could actually get an education, because before America went over there, the women had no rights at all, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So all these things didn't come out, you know. Huh?
That's not the image we saw.
I know. That's what I'm saying. All these things didn't come out because they wanted to keep perpetuating paying these trillions of dollars or billions of dollars, whatever they're paying, as a war thing. But the only people that was making money was your ex-vice president and, you know, his company and a couple other people that makes money off the war.
Right.
So if it was about our gas prices still is high, so it couldn't have been about all. We didn't get any.
This is true. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go pick up area code 404-451. Good evening. You're on Center Stage. Good evening. 404-451. I think I have the phone lines open. Let's try one more time. Good evening. 404-451. You're on Center Stage. Okay, obviously they must.
Hey, how you doing? Phone. How you doing? I had my phone on mute. I'm sorry.
Okay, hello? How you doing?
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm doing fine, Kelly. How you doing? This is Anthony. I was calling you with something that you was talking about. Now, the ministry where you was talking about the guy taking up money, was he talking about Freedom House, where they collected money for Freedom House? Okay.
No, he was talking about this. No, he was talking about this particular story, and he was very clear that you know they were taken, and that they were that the kidnappers were threatening to sell the hostages, and he was saying that we needed to collect money, you know, and he kind of stopped right there short of saying we're going to take this money and we're going to do with it, but he just said you know they're taking the hostages, you know that kidnappers were going to sell the hostages.
Reason why I brought this up is that now this would happen, and I'm kind of familiar with it in the past, but this would happen now. Something else is going on with this. I agree with you on that, something about this is not right. In the Sudan, they have been capturing women and children, holding them as slaves for Arabs. Mm. And Freedom House was collecting money to purchase the freedom. They would catch them before they would deliver them to the markets, and they would purchase them back. They would buy them from the kidnappers. It's what Freedom House was doing back in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s. Matter of fact, they're still doing. So kidnapping black Africans is not new. This has been going on, and you can Google it. You can pull up stories. They're making movies about it where they're capturing the girls, young kids, and they're making them servants for Arabs, things of that nature. So that's not new. But this situation is a little bit different because even though number one, they didn't need to go into Nigeria to capture those girls to sell them off to husbands. They didn't need to do that. But this organization went in, like you said, and slaughtered a bunch of boys. The other group were not slaughtering anybody. They would capture them, take them to the market, they would sell them. They are selling them very cheap. But this particular group is also killing as well as capturing. So it's something else going on underlying. As far as their military, Nigeria has a very weak military compared to some of the other countries like Uganda and a couple other places there. Their military is very weak. Nigeria is very first of all, Nigeria is a nice sized country, but they're weak. The money coming from the oil is not going back into the infrastructure or going back into the people. It's going into government officials' pockets. So in Nigeria, you have a very wealthy elitist class, and everyone else is very poor. The money is not being evenly distributed, and it's not going back into the infrastructure the way it needs to. If you went to Nigeria right now, they do have buildings and they do have cities, but if you go there, it's a very poor place. Education is very big to Nigerians, and you can see that even here because that's the way that a lot of them feel that they can get out of poverty is through education. And that's the reason why most Nigerians you meet speak more than one language. They're very smart. They're very educated. Education is big there. Now, I'm looking at it for the fact that I'm looking for like what happened back in the early 90s. What I'm looking for out of this is what organization is funding all of this. Back during that time in the Congo, Sierra Leone, where they was having different issues with a lot of different places, you had the broken-up South African government, executive decisions is what they call them now, because it's like a private military group was selling arms to these people. And then they would turn around and go into those countries after the rebels run roughshod over the government and they couldn't get them out. They would go to them and, hey, well, we can get them out for a price. And the government would give them money. They would give them mineral rights. They would give them different things as payment to go get the rebels out, when all they had to do was cut off the supply of weapons and guns to the rebels, and then they had control over whatever it is that they wanted. I'm kind of looking at that, like you were saying with the oil, that could be something that's going on. Maybe someone is pushing this or funding
I see from what you just said, caller, if their military is weak and if they are, yeah, if military is as weak as you just said, and they have, as Chicago Tribune just reported, the oil-rich Nigeria this year passed South Africa and Egypt to become the continent's wealthiest nation. That tells me that they're going to be invaded.
I believe it could be the start of that. Yeah, because, like you said, with the other countries, Africa, you have a lot of people that get control of the wealth, and they don't really want to let it go. And they control the wealth, keep it to themselves and their families while everybody else suffers. And usually someone will come in and back them and overthrow those particular people, and they'll go in exile somewhere and run off with some money. And they have a whole new group in charge of the money until another group comes in and runs them off and takes control of the money. So it could be that all of this is a setup, like you said, to actually start causing uprisings and upheaval in Nigeria, and someone will come take over the control. First thing I'm looking at is those girls were taken away in a military convoy. If you saw the video that they just had on the news that they're showing everywhere of the supposedly kidnappers saying that they're selling the girls. If you look behind them, they had tanks. They had armored vehicles. That is not cheap. Somebody's funding that. So you have to find out who's funding that. Now, as far as the military, one thing about a lot of, I'm not saying all African nations because they're all not weak, but certain nations where people are fighting for money, the military can be bought, or certain people in the military can be bought. And you could go in and say, well, hey, I'm going to pay you this, and I'm going to do it. And you turn a blind eye, and I'm going to go do this. And they'll, you know, and you can allow to go in there and do that. And it's like, oh, well, you know, we've been trying to stop them. We've been trying to catch them. But really, you haven't because you were paid off. You see, so I'm thinking for armored vehicles to come into a country and transport people out, somebody in that country had to know about it. Right.
In
broad
daylight.
Someone had to know about it. They had to know about it. Now, as far as the president,
you agree with that?
Well, I'm saying it's kind of hard with all the satellites that are all around the world that people can't see where they came from and where they went.
What was the name of this video that you saw? I mean, did you see this on a particular the YouTube video or?
You can find it. They've been showing it all the time on CNN, different news networks. You can only get a translation of what he's saying because he's speaking in another language. But they were saying that he's selling the girls. Allah told him he had the right to sell them, and that's where they came up with the story of selling the girls. But when you look in the background, they have armored vehicles. The girl said that they were taken away in military convoy vehicles. But when they were in the vehicles, the ones that they interviewed said that something just didn't look right. Those guys didn't look like they were there to help. They looked like they were nervous. They looked like they were afraid. And that's what made them notice that something was wrong. They need to get away because something about it wasn't right. So obviously they went in military vehicles. Now, for the president, like you were saying, they have a summit, an economic summit. Again, Nigeria has a lot of oil wealth. The people don't have a lot of money. They want to attract people in to come in and invest into Nigeria. They want to get corporations to move into Nigeria, but Nigeria is a very unstable place. So it's very unfriendly for me to open up my business and take my corporation there. So they want to attract, and that's something that they're not getting. So that's probably why he swept that under the rug, is to not let people know that things are as bad as they're saying that it is. That's what I'm thinking, that they don't want anybody to know that it's that bad, but it's really that bad.
Wow. I'm going to keep my eyes on this story. Because you've made some excellent points tonight, but I really do – based on what you said, I think I'm spot on. They're probably going to be invaded. I think this is just going to probably be the catalyst. Some kind of way is going to be a spin put on it. And you know, if the military is weak, that's just
like
going to be.
And one thing, also notice, you can go back and look. The slave trade in Africa has never ended. Even right now, they still capture children and young girls in the Sudan, and they take them to Arabic countries and sell them off as servants and slaves. They still do that right now. But that's the key to that is they capture them and they take them off as slaves, not killing them.
But that's why I said the term kidnap doesn't typically apply to black people, because kidnap implies that someone wants something in return. If you just come in and you take someone and you sell them off, you know, you just kind of invaded them and took the people. You're not asking for anything in return. You just went in just like, well, I don't want to talk about history, but like slavery for us. That's what happened.
Right.
They didn't come and kidnap us. If you want to look at it, they just came and took us, because they didn't ask for anything in return. They just took
us. And those people are not making videos to say, look, we're capturing your people. They're not doing all that. They just capture them. You never see them again. They sell them. Sooner or later, somebody will see them. Somebody will free them. Somebody will make a movie about them. Or somebody will show you that, hey, look, these people are being captured and sold. This has been going on. It has never stopped. And even right now it goes on, but nobody cares. Nobody investigates it. That's why I asked you, was it that organization that was collecting that money? Because maybe this church guy was thinking that they could go and purchase those girls the same way that the other group, Freedom House, was purchasing Africans in the Sudan and places of that nature. So I'm thinking maybe that's what he was trying to get at. But then again, he could have been taking up the money to keep for himself. Who knows?
I'm familiar with that particular ministry, and they never mention that organization that you're talking about. They just mention the word offering. But we're gonna take up the money, and then they just kind of stop short of telling you what they're gonna do with the money. But that happened. But thank you so much, Colin. You have really made some points. Thank you so much. Second part, yeah, we got to move on, but we're going to talk about two more things in this show, because we learned on Center Stage. The week is just, you know, we only come on once a week, and there's so many things going on in the country. We can't just talk about one story anymore. It's just so much going on. And another thing, y'all, you know, I've often talked about the fact that I thought that there was a gay agenda going on. I'm not homophobic, so be clear on that. But it is what it is. And it just seems like there's a wave where right now it's just popular to be gay. It's popular or trendy, if you will, to be gay. And everything, you know, in marketing right now, television, radio, your billboards, it all kind of seems like, you know, print, it all kind of has like a little undertone to it about the gay agenda. Well, one thing I've noticed, y'all, the same has started to apply about abortion. Now, whatever your religious belief is, or however you feel about abortion, whether it's you're pro-choice or pro-life, or how does it go, AJ? Pro-life or what's
pro-choice?
The situation? Pro-choice. The thing is, still it's a life. And whether you've had one or haven't had one, or your girlfriend had one, the thing is, it's not something that you want to hear somebody glorify in a video. And what I'm about to play you is a video on YouTube, and you all can go to it later, and it's called Emily's Abortion Video. To be honest with you, I was disturbed by it. I was disturbed by it because, you know, I happen to no longer be a very impressionable person, but I do know that I have nieces and nephews and relatives that are. And I think for every young person out there who's still impressionable because they just haven't matured to a certain point, I think this video was very dangerous. And I think whoever put this video out needs to basically go back and examine what kind of message they were really trying to send, because the message that I received is not a good one. And I'm going to let you judge for yourself. But it's up on YouTube, and it's called Emily's Abortion Video. Scariest thing I've heard in a long time. Surprised at how they presented this. But you guys be the judge. Let's see. Right now it's on YouTube. It's had 1,295,313 hits. Okay? And that's just been up 1 month. So if that gives you any indicator of how many people are seeing this and how many people may be affected, that's kind of scary to me. So let me pull it up. But you all be the judge. Let me pull it up. You all be the judge, but I just thought when I saw this, it was scary. For every young girl out there who may be contemplating this, it just was a scary thing to see, and I just wondered. Here we go.
Hi. I am a patient advocate at the Cherry Hill Women's Center. I talk with women before their abortion procedures. I found out that I am pregnant. Hey, I'm pregnant. And now I'm pretty early.
I'm not ready to have children.
Yeah, I'm going to be having an abortion tomorrow morning.
What I need you to do is bring up the back of your gown.
Okay.
Now let's see what you're
doing at
this table.
Okay. I'm lucky because I feel completely like comfortable with this decision. I'm supported by everyone.
I'll be by your side the whole time during the procedure. Your hand to hold. I'll be here.
I just want to share my story. Show women that there is such thing as a positive abortion story.
I got a lot of hands. Got a lot of abortion. Pretty lucky for all.
Guilty as if it's a given how people should feel about this, that what they're doing is wrong. I don't feel like a bad person. I don't feel sad. I feel in awe of the fact that I can make a baby. I can make a life. I knew that what I was going to do was right, because it was right for me and no one else. I just want to share my story.
Okay, y'all. AJ Houston. That's disturbing to me. That's disturbing.
Well, I guess I'm saying it is disturbing, but I guess the thing that I'm looking at is, you know, I talk to my sons all the time because they find videos on YouTube I've never seen in my life. I'm like, that is the stupidest thing I ever saw, but it has 8 million hits.
Mm.
And I think, see, now you can become famous. You can go on TV shows. Just like the guy said, hide your mama, hide your kids, hide your, whatever it was he was doing. He made the talk show circuit. He was on everybody's talk show. Bought him a purse first, and I think he got moved out of the hood, got him a house with the money that he made. But he had nothing else to offer. So I think everybody see this instant. See, now when you talk about 15 minutes of fame, you're talking about 15 minutes. Now when you talk about 15 minutes of fame, they're talking about you doing a circuit. You know, you're doing a circuit because you got the popular video, you made people laugh, or you got the funny cat, or you got whatever, and they have you on some talk show showing how the cat is funny because everybody's trending. that's what we follow, whatever's trending. And I think the problem with this is that people will find something, some of the most morbid things or some of the most heinous or hilarious things, and send that link out so everybody else starts sending it to their friends, so now they get this buzz and it starts trending. And I really don't think that, you know, because the last thing she said is, you know, it was right for her.
Mm-hmm.
See, to me, as a man, see, I have a problem with me trying to tell any woman what to do with her body. Now, if I was the father of the fetus or the child, I feel like I should have a say so in the matter.
There you go. I think if I'm not mistaken, I have to go back and listen to the video again. I think it's the at some point in the video, she says the father was not involved, or she was making the decision, you know, without the father. I don't know. It just, I think that's a slippery slope. I think some of the things that she said in the video, she said there is a such thing as a positive abortion story. Wow. I think she said that, you know, when I watched, and you can go and look at it yourself, they're doing the actual procedure. She's there, you know, on the table. Somebody's holding her hand as they're doing this procedure. And she says that everyone supports her in her decision. And she said it's a cool issue that, you know, she feels cool about it. You know, it feels good. Really? You know, I don't know that, you know, she talks about the fact, you know, after it was done, I'm done. You know, I don't feel sad. And then she went on at the end, which makes no sense. She's just finished an abortion, and she's telling how cool it is to make a life. How cool is it to make a life and then kill a life? I mean, and I'm not bashing anybody that's done, you know, because your decision is based on what your situation is and what's right for you at the time. My problem is for someone to do a video and glorify the fact that they took a life. That's it. To me, that's like somebody going and saying, I killed somebody, and then they get on the billboard and tell everybody, yeah, I'm so happy I took somebody's life. That's, to me, what this is equivalent to. It's okay that you do it if you feel like that's what you got to do, because you'll meet God at some point and you'll answer to him yourself. That's okay. But I don't think it's right to post a video and influence young girls that this is a cool and trendy thing to do.
But Kerry, my thing is, see, a lot of people aren't parenting anymore. The parents aren't parenting. So I understand what you're saying, but see, my issue is this. I've seen people write a poem about something that happened years ago, and it was all right when they wrote it, but when they get on stage to perform it, break down and cry, because the impact of whatever it is hits you at some point in time. You can share yourself as long as your friends will help you share yourself, but eventually you got to face yourself. And I think the realization comes in when you're in that room by yourself and you start facing yourself and facing the issues and facing the things that you've done, then it begins to matter. So no matter what you say on the outside, doesn't mean that's what's going on the inside. Because a lot of times it's cool to get this video out there and get all these hits, and you have a lot of people on your side. But you have a lot of people that's not on your side, but you never worry about those. It's like, if I can get me 2 million hits, I'll be on a couple of shows. Ellen will have me on a show, you know, and, you know, Arsenio might put me on his show. And that's what everybody's trying to do, is to do the most outlandish thing, put it out there to see if they can get enough hits so they can become famous for 1 minute.
And that's really what it's about. I mean, seriously, because, you know, when you look at it at the end of the day, that's such a personal decision. And I just don't know that it's a decision that you're supposed to make in front of the world. That's just me. And I just think it's something sick about somebody oohing and aahing on a video and making it sound trendy to have an abortion.
Sure, I have a friend of mine that has probably the her signature poem. It's called Blue Line Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And Blue Line Kill is about the EPT test, the pregnancy test.
Mm.
You know, where you pee on it. But, and see, I saw her perform this poem with about 6,000 people in the audience.
Mm.
And, you know, I knew the poem verbatim, so I'm waiting to see when the audience actually catches on to what the poem is about. You could see the body movements. You could see people's head moving. You could see them, you could see them cringe when they finally got what the poem was about, an abortion. And see, she did it, but when she wrote the poem, it affected her after she wrote the poem. And see, that's what I'm saying. See, she might not have any remorse right now.
Hey.
But later on, when she sit in her own quiet place, might be walking through the mall, see somebody else's kids playing, or driving past a park. And I was wondering if would I have a boy or a girl. So, see, all these things are running around in your head. Whether you accept them running around is the issue, or whether you can deal with them running around is the issue, because sometimes people cannot deal with their decisions years after the decision was made.
Oh, I agree. That's why when I first heard of the video, and, you know, she seems like she's relatively young, and I thought, you know, at some point, you know, your conscience will catch up with you, and you will live to think this is just one of the dumbest things you've ever done. I mean, because sometimes you make decisions as young people that you go back and go, Lord, was I stupid. Trust me, this young lady will live to say, Lord, was I stupid, because it speaks to a lot of things about you. You know, what sane person would want to do a video? She says that she works in this type of facility. Why then would you think it's great to glorify such a gory experience? I would think it would be so deeply personal that you would not want to share that with a camera crew, to say the least.
But another way to look at it, another way to look at it.
Yeah.
Imagine when we were younger, if we had Twitter and YouTube and you could use your phone to post a video, I'm quite sure I did a whole lot of stupid stuff that probably would have been on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
I could get it off once it's on there, but I'm saying, so we have to look at where we're living now, what we're doing, because it's just that way that you do things, just like you were talking about the Mark Cuban posted, there was something that right after you posted, you took it down. Because out of anger, out of rage, you would say something, and you said, oh, man, I shouldn't have said that, I need to take that back.
Oh, we're going to talk about that next. We're going there next. We're going there next. We're going to talk about the Donald Sterling update. We're going to talk about that next. You know, but I just wanted you all to go to YouTube yourself, check out the video. Like I said, it's under Emily's abortion video, and you all decide for yourself. But in my opinion, the young lady obviously needs some counseling, because what she thinks is cool and trendy, trust me, in a couple of years, she will think is not so cool and trendy. So, you know, just something to think about in terms of, you know, where our world is headed, because if it's going in that direction, we're in trouble. But, AG, since you brought up the Donald Sterling story, we'll go there. A lot is going on with that story. A lot is going on with that story. It's ironic, y'all. Now, this is a story I told last week, and AJ's alluding to. Back in 2009 is when I think I was first introduced to Twitter. And trust me, I was good at it. I'm serious. I think every Twitter app that dealt with people who posted or tweeted really cool things, I was definitely in that group. And Twitter took up a whole lot of my time because it was something so new. And at that time, it was hard to figure out where you wanted to be on Twitter, because there was this rush initially for people who wanted to be friends with all the celebrities. And then when there was people who wanted to be friends with other groups and so on and so forth. But anyway, at that particular time, I was trying to find out, well, who were all the celebrities on Twitter? And I found that Mark Cuban was a celeb, because a lot of the celebs at that time had fake accounts. Well, people had fake accounts where they were trying to appear to be Michael Jordan or this person or that person. And so it was hard to tell who was real, who was a fake. But at that particular time, Mark Cuban was one of the people you knew that was Mark Cuban's account. And his brother also followed him on Twitter. Well, going there to say that one day when I was on Twitter, Mark Cuban was on Twitter at the same time, and I looked on his page, and Mark Cuban, this was during their time in 2009 when the Denver Nuggets was playing the Dallas Mavericks in the playoffs. The night before, Keon Martin had done something on the court, and it really pissed off Mark Cuban, and Mark Cuban called him a thug and a punk. Well, Keon's mother was sitting close to Cuban on the floor, and they had words after Cuban called Keon Martin a thug and a punk. The next day it made the news and blah, blah, blah. But Cuban also posted on Twitter about it. He did not call Keon's name, but he said something to the effect, and it's funny that we're talking about this, because I have been going back on my Twitter account looking for the comment, and you can go back so far, it's a long process, to go back and find your actual tweet. But this is what happened. Cuban posted a tweet, and the gist of it was, I hope and I'm saying exactly what I remember this to say, but I'm missing some parts, but this is the gist of it. I hope you come and spit it in your mother's mouth because all you niggas point shave. That's and the word nigga was used. The word point shave was used. And exactly what I said, all those words were exactly, those words were in that particular tweet. But when I saw it, I was outraged. I was like, what person of Mark Cuban's status would be stupid enough, and that's just really what I was thinking at the time, to post this? So I immediately began to retweet it to friends of mine and say, go to Mark Cuban's page. Mark Cuban has tweeted this. Anyway, with a local newscaster here, I forwarded the tweet to him and was like, you know, look what Mark Cuban, you know, has written and blah, blah, blah. Well, that said, I realized at that point that Mark Cuban's brother, who was an attorney, and I believe he was Mark Cuban's attorney as well, or one of his attorneys, I sent the tweet or reposted the tweet and sent it to him, retweeted the tweet to his brother and said, listen, I think Mark owes the fans, you know, all the people in Twitterverse that saw this, you know, basically the players, he owes everybody an apology for seeing this. A few minutes later, Mark Cuban removed the tweet. And a couple of days later, Twitter came out with some memo that they were basically the gist of it was that you did not have the right to read a tweet if you were not following a person, which totally made no sense because that's what Twitter's all about. That's how you decide who you're going to follow is by being able to read what tweets. So anyway, I don't think that part ever really stood, but it did happen. And so saying all that to say, I noticed this week that the only NBA owner who's not saying Donald Sterling needs to get out of there is who? Is Mark Cuban. Did you catch that, AJ? He's the only one who says everybody has the right to be a moron every now and then. But he absolutely has not jumped on the bandwagon that he needs to lose his team because he knows he did that. He's probably done other things, but that I personally know I saw Mark Cuban do. I saw that.
I'm saying, I understand what you're saying. I'm not defending this particular instance or anything, but Mark Cuban has been the most fine in the NBA, in the history of the NBA.
What?
He had to pay up $750,000 for something he said one time. But every time he's fined by the NBA, he has a fine that he actually. So Mark Cuban stopped talking a long time ago. So when people ask him questions about anything about the NBA, the refereeing or whatever, he's making no comments because he knows there was. At the time, Stern was, you know, because I really believe that when the Mavs lost to Miami Heat the first time, that was the first time Stern went into the locker room and talked to Mark Cuban when the Mavs was up 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, good series. Y'all played a good game. But I didn't take it as though he said that y'all not winning any more games because the Mavs didn't, and the calls went strictly toward Miami. So to me, that was like this sign saying, I'm in control of this NBA thing. I'm in control of this. And I'm saying, because I think that game, Dwayne Wade shot 26 free throws by himself, and the Mavericks team as a whole shot like 24.
Okay.
But I'm saying, as far as Mark Cuban commenting anything about the NBA, I can see why he won't, because he didn't pay them enough money.
Listen, he's the only one, y'all, that has come forward to listen. When they asked him, I think initially he didn't want to say nothing, and then he was like, listen, I think he has a right to be a moron. Everybody has a right to be a moron every now and then. And so this is how I feel about that, and it probably will sound strange from coming from a black person, but I just feel like we got to be real careful, especially with all this NSA spying. Listen, if you want somebody to record your conversations, your private conversations, and then release them publicly and get you in trouble when you were, you know, in the privacy of your own home talking amongst people that you consider family and friends, I think we're in trouble if we go down that road. I think it was Martin Luther King that said that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so even though I think Donald Sterling, what he said definitely sounds racist, it really did, but at the same time, he had a right to say it if he wanted to. And if we have never said anything about anybody that, we didn't want repeated, then we really shouldn't hold this guy, and nail him to a cross. I think this is a slippery slope. And I think it may set the precedence way down the road to come back and get all of us. So it is my belief that unless you're going to get everybody who's ever made a comment in private, I think this is something we really should be careful about. If you're going to get him, catch him right. Catch him when he stands up in public and says something that he's not supposed to say that's inappropriate. But I don't know that somebody privately taping a conversation is free game for people to use against you. Do you agree with that part, AJ?
Yeah, why do you sound like me last week?
Do I what?
How did you sound like me last week?
How did I do what?
I said, why now do you sound like me last week?
Okay, exactly. I think AJ and I are on the same page, and I got over you from last week, then AJ. AJ, it's a scary time. I mean, I think it's a scary. If somebody went back sometime, we've all been immature. We've all been stupid. When I get around my friends, I'm not racist at all. But when I get around my friends, I act silly. I like to have fun. I have a very playful side. But that's the side that typically people on the radio never see. So,
I don't want everybody
to
come. I'm sorry, I brought up instance like a married couple.
Yeah.
Either both of them don't like their in-laws or one of them don't like one of their in-laws.
Yeah.
It's always that way. So you've had these conversations where, oh, man, they're coming out again. How long they stay in this time? Man, I hate when they come down here and you had this conversation. But if you record the conversation and play it for his parents or her parents, imagine the issue that would be. That would be a horrible thing. They're going to think you're the worst person in the world, and they're going to want to come see you. And you say, no, that was just a conversation. I like when y'all come down. It's just y'all stay till it. You can't clean it up.
And see, I think the problem, too, is, and I think we talked about this a little last week, we work for people. I mean, I probably go to grocery stores where the owner don't like black people. I probably go to dry cleaners where they don't like black people. The thing is, do we choose everything we do based on whether or not somebody likes us or not? So I think that's the problem I have, the biggest problem I have. If everybody's going to quit their job because their boss is a racist, it's going to be a whole bunch of black folks sitting at the house.
Yeah,
and so when people...
Now, don't finish. I'm sorry.
And when people told the players, if I was you, y'all got enough money to walk off the court, that's stupid. Those people have lifestyles that they are, accustomed to. They're just going to walk off their job because they found out that their boss is a racist. That's just ludicrous.
But see, the thing is, when I heard that, I was thinking of how some players, when they're late for a meeting, they're fined $20,000. So there's a whole lot of things in the contract that you can't do or put up with. So not showing up or walking off the court, you're liable to the contract that you have besides this man's secret conversation that he had with this woman that was trying to get him to say nigga about 80 times. I'm saying, cause that was my thing. Every time I listen to the tape, he said this conversation is over. It's a culture.
Yeah.
And she kept saying, well, why do you just hate minorities? He was like, I don't want y'all to mess with him. No, why do you hate minorities? Like, she was trying to get him to say the word a bunch of times. And I was proud of him that he never said it. But every time I listened to the tape, I didn't hear him say he didn't want black people coming to the game. I heard him tell her, don't bring that to the game. You don't got to bring them to the game. Like, she bringing all the black people to the game herself?
Yeah.
I'm saying, so that was my thing. When the media came out with it and everybody started these rants on what he said and he didn't want Magic Johnson at the game, he just didn't want her taking pictures with Magic Johnson on Twitter because he got a wife and a girlfriend, which, I'm trying to figure out, I don't know how that works to where they're going, but he got a wife and a girlfriend, and he said, look, you with me. I don't want you doing that. If you told me you didn't want me doing something, I would stop. I'm just telling you to stop it. So don't bring that to the game and don't bring this. And then it became this misinterpreted thing to me that everybody starts saying what he meant. They didn't say what he said. They said what he meant.
Mm.
And then everybody took it as they were the true interpreters of his saying. So now the media and the masses were mad, but I didn't hear the same anger when Mitt Romney said even more horrible things about us, and he still ran for president, and some black people probably still voted for him.
And see, that's the, you know, and that's the ironic part about this. You know, I think he probably has done some stuff, along with his wife, Shelley, she's done some stuff too, you know, that probably, you know, make them sound like the biggest racists, and they probably, and maybe are. I'm not going to even defend that part. The part is, unless we all want to be penalized for conversations that we had in private, this is a slippery slope. And I think we just have to be careful when somebody records you. I can't get an understanding. Somebody's lying somewhere. The girlfriend is saying that he had knowledge that she was recording that conversation. I just don't think that makes sense.
She has to say that. She has to say that now.
Exactly, because she go to jail, right? You're exactly right.
I think she has to say that, but the thing is why would you sell the tape? I'm gonna tell you, I'm gonna record this and I'm gonna sell it. But she gave it to somebody else to sell the TMZ. But see, my problem with the whole matter is that she perpetuated and kept the conversation going for so long, even after you said three or four times, I'm not talking about this no more. It's over. You know, we got a problem. You know, and she was like, well, why do you? And she kept asking the same question. No, and see, my thing is, when somebody knows you, when you're married to somebody, that person can say the slightest thing. You could be in a restaurant, and they would say, you know, Beelzebub or whatever it is they know will make you angry. And you ask the food in the restaurant, they would say, I don't know what was wrong with him, but they whispered it to you. They were the catalyst in starting it, but now you're the culprit. You're the bad person. But I'm saying they're instigators, huh?
I'm agreeing with you. She instigated the conversation. I mean, and it was clear, you know, that she had some ulterior motives there. That's just my opinion. But this is the thing. I just think unless they're going to get Mark Cuban for that tweet that I know I saw, and everybody else who's done something in that NBA or not, I just don't think this is right. I think if they got other stuff on it, That's what they need to pursue. But I just don't think they can pursue a private conversation. And I think they talk something about an agreement that the owners have to sign, that they basically the gist of it is they wouldn't do anything, I guess, in their personal life to bring embarrassment to the organization. Get that part. But, again, somebody's recording something that you did not know they were recording in the privacy of your own home or wherever they were. I just don't know if that's the same thing. I think if you follow a different person home and said, I'm gonna get out the white gloves on everything you say from now on, and if you say anything that crosses this line, you know, you're going to lose this or that, I think, you know, most of us wouldn't pass the white glove test. That's just me.
But I'm saying, to me, the First Amendment is the issue right here. And not only that, it's in California, it's illegal to record somebody's conversation. And the other issue is that his wife was next in line to own the team. I think she owns 50% because he has, prostate cancer or something that he's had for a couple of years. But she's supposed to own the team, so I don't see how they came from her on an illegal conversation when they can prosecute whoever in California for recording somebody's illegal conversation and selling it to another company that's in California that know the rules and know the laws, but they say, hey, as long as we the first one on the story, we good. It's what we do.
I don't know. I just think, and did you notice that his CEO, they made that person, I forgot what his name was, y'all. I apologize for not remembering his name, but they made him go on an indefinite leave because he had been with Donald Sterling for like decades, and I guess they felt like, you know, they didn't want the old type regime there anymore, so they're bringing in a new CEO. And all that's fine if that's, you know, how they want to do it. But at the same time, I think just to tell the man that you're banned from the NBA for life and that you need to sell your team just because you had a private conversation with the Hoochie and the Hoochie recorded you and sold it to TMZ, I think, come on.
Can we do that with Congress?
Who?
I'm asking, can we do that with Congress? Because the good old boy system is really working, you know, to the peak of working, and you said they didn't want the old regime in. I'm like, can we do that with Congress?
I agree. I mean, you know, it would just overhaul so many people. I mean, it just, I don't know. I mean, I know I've had bosses that I know were racist. I mean, really. But I went to work every day with the attitude that I'm just coming to make my paycheck. I'm going to do my job, you know, and I didn't come here to make friends. I came here to work. And so I think most of us go to work like that. I mean, we don't go to work thinking we got to be best friends with our boss, and our boss has got to like us, and our boss can't say anything, you know, about us in his private time, you know, because, you know, that you know, it's forbidden by the organization or whatever. I don't know. That's just me, y'all, but something's very wrong with this. And I think.
But Terry, you know, I bet you Jesse Jackson looked around a couple of times before he said anything.
And make sure his mic is closed, too.
make sure anybody got no camera. No, nobody standing close. No live speakers on.
Listen, I was having a conversation with someone. What day was that? Wednesday? And they were fiddling with their phones. And I was like, listen, if you don't mind, can you put that phone down? I mean, I said, after Donald, really. I just don't trust people. You know, with telephones. I mean, and it's bad, but you just want a private conversation to be private. I wasn't using racist comments or anything like that, but I just now believe in, you know, maybe it needs to be stated when you're having a conversation with someone. I want this private conversation to be private, and so can you put your phone down so we can have this conversation? Because
you got to say that every 3 minutes or so, like a disclaimer, just in case.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I literally told this person, can you put your phone down? You know, and they were just, I don't know, they were just pushing buttons, and I was just like, stop. Listen, I can't concentrate on what I'm saying because, you know, I after Donald Sterling, I don't want anything I said to be overheard by anybody that I'm not talking to. And I think that's
what I'm saying. We got to do it like the show. You know how you say, the comments on this show is not, you know, representative. I'm saying we got to do that while we're having conversations with people now. You know,
it's literally that way, though. But everybody's got a cell phone, and everybody's got a recorder and a camera, and you know, it has its place. Don't get me wrong; that is one of the greatest technologies that we've had in decades. But at the same time, it can be abused, and it can be used for good, and it can be used for evil. And I think with him, that particular phone was used for evil, and I think her story that she's sticking to is that there was a third person in the room. They recorded the conversation, and I think what was her reason? She was keeping the tape because it was just a matter of history more than anything, that she was never planning to use it to threaten him with it or blackmail him. She was just keeping it in safekeeping because, she was questioning whether or not he was a racist, and whether or not their relationship could withstand, I think I'm getting this right. She was trying to see where their relationship was, and so she was letting where their relationship stood, I guess I should say. So she was letting another person listen to it and also keep it in safekeeping.
Carrie. Monica Lewinsky had the dress cleaned at the cleaners 3 times, but circled at one spot she didn't want him to touch.
You know what? I don't know what the dry cleaning process is, but I doubt very seriously you can tell your dry cleaner not to touch a certain spot on the dress.
No, but when they pulled the dress out and tested it, the dress had been to the cleaners. It had been cleaned. So I'm saying for safekeeping, just these are two people that kept them for safekeeping that destroyed somebody's life, almost.
You know, I don't know, and I agree with you. Monica Lewinsky is a very good example of that. I just think, you know, sometimes when we see stories like this, we're not looking at the big picture. I think it's easy to take Donald Sterling and nail him to a cross. I really do. I think because what he said, it was mean-spirited, if you want to look at it, that he doesn't want black people coming to the game. But see, me as
That's
a black person.
Said.
Well, he said, don't be bringing them to the game. He did say that.
How many people was she bringing to the game? She brought every black person to the game?
Well, she said, I don't know Magic personally, so I don't bring him to the game. And he's like, he said what?
I know he said don't bring that to the game. Don't be taking your Instagram account. Don't be taking pictures with all the people, with all the colors.
Exactly, in essence. And when he said the word culture, you know, this is the thing, and I think most people probably don't feel this way, but I'm an independent thinker. This is how I feel. I can really appreciate people who tell me how they feel. I don't get angry with those people. I get angry with people who don't really tell me how they feel. So if Donald Sterling said, and I would just take it this way because I'm African-American, don't bring them to the game, I interpreted that as all blacks. I really did. So all that would mean to me is, hey, listen, if you want to go to an NBA game, don't make it a Clippers game. I wouldn't be mad at him. I wouldn't. And I think everybody that has cussed him out and got mad because he said that, I think they're wrong. I think if somebody tells me don't bother spending your money at my game, I'd be like, okay. Okay, I'm going to a Lakers game.
I don't think it included me because I don't know her, and she wasn't taking me to any game anyway.
Yeah, this is true, too. This is true, too. I just think
that's the point I'm making is that what was said, what people said was said got repeated and not what was said. So I understand how they hold him in the present for his past atrocities. I'm not saying he don't have all the faults and he's not a racist. I'm saying that you can't today hold this man accountable for what, you know, what Elgin Baylor was mad about, what Kareem was mad about, what the other players were mad about, what all those other players in history were mad about, because they knew who this person was when they played for him, when they worked for him. This was not that instance. This was not that instance to bring it out, but this is what brought out everything that from the past. And the past overshadowed the present, so nobody was critical on what was said on the tape. It didn't matter because everybody repeated what they thought they heard, and that's what everybody heard when they said, this is what I heard. So everybody said, yeah, me too.
But see, when he speaks of the culture, to me that speaks of a time in which, you know, everything is done politically correct. And I think what he was saying to her, if I interpreted him correctly, is that if you are going to reach a certain status, then there's a way to play the game. And you are so new to what we do that you are, he said, he even called her stupid, then you must be stupid. If you can't understand that it's just certain things you're not going to do if you want to be successful. That's what I understood him to say when he was referring to the culture.
No, I'm saying that's what he was saying, but that's like saying, B, you've been with me some years, and I don't know why we're having this conversation because you already know my opinion. That's what I read
from
that. So for her perpetuating the conversation to go further meant that she heard him say the N-word a couple of times in private. She was trying to get him to say it on tape.
So does that lead to the fact that he knew at some point that he was being recorded and he was smarter than to say it? Or maybe he doesn't use the word, but he understands or he looks at it like the culture. It's basically the same thing. The culture and the N-word,
It's not. It's talking about the same people, but not the same thing. See, to me, what was going on is he had already told her that they had a problem. Like, she probably knew they had a problem before now, so she's bringing this out because she knows they ain't going to be hanging out too much longer. She's not going to have all these free stuff and hang around all these rich people. So that was her way of getting paid and getting him in trouble. But what she did is she isolated herself from hanging out with any rich people ever again, unless it's Magic Johnson there.
See, you know, what she said later just really kind of made no sense to me. She said she was his personal assistant. She wasn't his girlfriend. And I thought, okay, but didn't you say on the video or the audio that I heard, she said, but you love me. Isn't that how she said that, but you love me? You remember those words? Okay. Trust me, she said it. She said in the audio, but you love me, referring to the fact that, okay, I may not understand your culture, and I may not do it like you do it, but you still love me. You know, so I don't know when I would ever tell a boss, you know, that – you know, in that type of way. I think the way she said it implied that of a girlfriend referring to a boyfriend, you know, about a situation. It didn't sound like a boss and an employee relationship. I didn't take it that way. But she's telling
now,
people
when,
she
when
wasn't.
Now, when the video came out at first, it didn't have her name. It had GF, girlfriend.
Okay. Well, they said she's been in jail and had. Huh?
Something everybody knew that was his girlfriend.
Mm.
So to start making something else.
Well, she's clarifying with Barbara Walters that she wasn't a girlfriend, that she's his personal assistant. That's what was said. And so if she's his personal assistant, I don't know that a personal assistant should be telling her boss, but I know you love me. So, and the wife is suing her because she's calling her girlfriend. So I think Stefanio needs to move on with that one. We're not going to fall for the fact she's a personal assistant. I think she's a personal assistant with privileges, and I think he's a boss with privileges. So, and that's their business, if that's what it is. But don't lie and say she's just his personal assistant. I think that's just not true. And I think it's come out this week, and I didn't get a chance to catch the story. I was looking for it and found it too late, that he's saying that he said what he said because he was jealous. So, he was jealous, I guess, of the picture, which, I can believe that.
But that's what he said. That's what he was saying the whole time to me, because he said, look, if you asked me to stop doing something, I care for you. I would stop it, whatever it was. He said, I'm just asking you to stop that. Don't bring that to the games. So that was interpreted as don't bring him to the games. Like she would go by, pick Magic Johnson up and bring him to the game, go by, pick up the other 20,000 black people that was at the game and bring them to the games. So I'm still not understanding how she said he didn't want black people at the game. He was saying don't bring that to the game as far as on her Instagram account, because they were dating. They were a couple. He didn't want her taking pictures with black people or whoever else, because you're my woman.
Yeah, I think I did pick up some of that, where he was basically saying, listen, all this taking pictures and stuff, don't do that. Don't be flaunting what you're doing on Instagram. Because even a couple of times, this is the part I must admit was a little gray for me, and I could not understand what he meant by this. And he was like, listen, I don't care what you do. You can go to bed with them for all I care. That wasn't the way he said it, but you know what I mean. And he said that. And I thought, if they were boyfriend and girlfriend, why would he tell her that she could do that?
That was the fourth time she brought up the same thing. Why you hate minorities? Why you don't like Magic Johnson? And he said, I respect Magic Johnson. I got mad respect for Magic Johnson. And I don't hate minorities. And then when she said it again, he said, okay, you can go and screw him, you can bring him to the house, do whatever. And that's out of anger. See, that was the point that she thought she was gonna get the N-word.
At the end of the day, I'll just say it like this. At the end of the day, something's very wrong with the world when we say we can go in the privacy of your own home or your automobile or wherever, you're having a private conversation, and somebody that you think is a friend records you and then releases it to the public later, and then you're penalized for it. I think that's a slippery slope. I mean, because, it'll make people start freezing up all over this country. Nobody will trust anybody to have a private conversation. And it's just going to take us somewhere we're not wanting to go. That's just me, AJ. I don't think that's a smart way to go about. I think if people publicly make a butt out of themselves, that's one thing. But I think if someone privately has an argument with someone in the heat of the moment, they make some of the comments that whether he meant them or not. But you could tell that was a very heated exchange. And he constantly was telling her, leave me alone, I'm out of this, and she just kept going on. So I don't know. I just think we're...
See, to me, that's almost like somebody secretly reading your emails and said, you need to read this email that he sent and make it public. It's like, I sent this to one person. This is our dialogue. That somebody, finding out what movies you rented and say, he rented this movie right here. He's a racist. So I'm saying, when you start invading the privacy of somebody's home, making it public, how much of your privacy is going to be made public? Or what's out of bounds? What's across the line?
Oh, and I agree. Someone recently baited me, and I must admit, I fell for it. I felt so foolish afterwards, but I fell for it. They needled me. Oh, my God. Every chance they got, they said things about me. They made accusations that weren't true. I mean, and they just kept needling me. And the first time, you know, that I came upon them after that, boy, did I let them have it. And some words that, you know, are not nice words. And then I realized after the fact, I was set up. I was absolutely set up because they knew what they had done would get that reaction. So when I came across them again and I didn't say anything, they looked at me like, wow, why didn't she say anything? Why didn't she? But I knew their MO by then. I realized that that's how they operate. They needle at you, and then they set you up to make comments, you know, when they have the audience in place. And so I'm not falling for that again. So it seems like to me Donald Sterling was in the exact same boat that I was. He was needled to a certain point, and then the audio was put in place, and it's like, okay, let's get him now. And so I think she set the perfect stage for the perfect storm. She got it. I think that.
How old was the audio?
I don't know. They said it wasn't new, though. It wasn't fresh, right?
No. I'm saying how old was it? So I'm saying this begins to tell the story and the motives. Because, see, a lot of times after it was recorded, they could have been hanging out again and doing whatever they had been doing before. So everything's all right. But then when they got in this little rocky relationship again, now it's time to play to get the money for the tape.
Well, listen, I know on that audio he says, you know what, I don't think I want to go to Europe. I don't think I want to go to some trip. I think I heard the word Europe. I don't think I want to go. And so I guess, listen, I bet you they went ahead and went to Europe because when she produced the tape, he was like, okay, we're going to go to Europe. It just seems like she just had a perfect stash for blackmail, you know. So he just sounded like he was about to lavish her with some stuff, you know, like trips. And after she needled him, so he just said, you're such a fighter. You know, you just love to fight. And you know, I don't think I want to go to Europe. You know, I don't think I want to go anywhere. And I think he was just, it just sounds like he was realizing that whatever they had, it was past. And that he was just ready to move on. And I think that was her, ransom.
Yeah, I'm saying, because he told her in the conversation, he said, look, after he said the cultural thing, he said, you know, we got problems. If you don't understand this, we really got problems. We got real problems. Like, we're not going to be who we were. This relationship ain't going to work. At least that was my interpretation of it.
I agree.
I'm saying, imagine a man and his girlfriend arguing, and you can imagine all the horrible things they would say to each other that they know would hurt each other.
Ooh.
And somebody record that conversation and play it, because they say, oh, look, this is Curry really is. But it's you're about to get divorced, you're having this mad conversation, and they play the conversation and say, no, I was baited. That was when we was fighting. He had taken my stuff, but nobody wants to hear what had happened. They're just going on the conversation that they're playing audio of.
Oh, you know what? If someone were just to take that conversation and not, you know, say, well, what happened before? What happened after? If they were just to take the conversation as it was and not want to know what was the circumstances surrounding how that conversation came to be, I think it looks like she's got him. If you're not a thinker, but if you're a deep thinker, you realize it was something that happened that preceded that, you know. And so I just think that she thought she was clever, you know, but now she's possibly facing charges. I think they've, you know, released the fact that she had a previous arrest. She had aliases, you know, so she's going to come off as somewhat of a con artist, in my opinion. And so I think what she did has somewhat backfired. Would you agree with that, AJ? It just kind of backfired on her.
Yep, I'm saying he had 20 years of showing that he was a racist with everybody that worked for him and played for him and coached for him. He had 20 years of showing that. So that wasn't anything new.
Nope.
So to use the tape to bring up all the old stuff, to me, is what the problem is. I'm saying, to me, I find fault in that. I find fault that you knew this man. Everybody's coming out of the woodwork. Come on. Well, he did this to me. He's coming to the locker room and patting me on my shoulder and say, oh, look at this great specimen of a buck. Look at him. We can go out and breed this one. You know, that's not what he was saying, but that's the way they were acting like he was saying. So they knew.
Really?
Who he was, huh?
Really?
Now I said he used to walk in the locker room and he pat the black guys on the shoulder, bring his friends in there, his big enough friends in there and say, hey, yeah, look at this one. Hey, I like this one right here. And it's like the auction box slave kind of thing. But he wasn't saying the derogatory things, but his actions were racist.
Yeah.
So I'm saying they knew who he was long before they put out in public who they thought he was.
And I'm not sure if that is ignorance, you know, on his part, or if that is just the culture, as he put it, that he came from. But either way, it seems like to me, you know, this man was an attorney, you know, and he's had the team for 33 years now. So, you know, I think if they allowed it all these years and they're going to take just a private conversation to hang him with, I think that's wrong. I think if they're
like
going to hang him for what he did in public, not for what he did in private.
Now you sound like me, girl. That's all I've been saying the whole time.
I think they're wrong. I absolutely think they're wrong. And I think, you know, what do you think Adam Silver is going to do? The NBA, what, his commissioner? What do you think he's going to do?
I think he's going to try and do exactly what he said.
Wow.
But like I told you, the problem is his wife owns 50% of the team, and I don't see how they can take the team from her when they're going off of some of his girlfriend said. Now, look at this dichotomy. This man is with his girlfriend, and because of this secret conversation. Now you're going to tell his wife that, oh, he's with his girlfriend, so if you got a girlfriend, that means that how can you have both?
Well, maybe that's why the wife was trying to be so cooperative with the NBA and saying, listen, I stand behind y'all getting rid of him.
No,
I understand. I stand behind y'all getting a new CEO. Huh?
She owned 50%, and she was next in line on the team anyway.
Yeah. But see, the wife does not, you know, come off as an innocent person either, because they said that she used to harass her tenants, you know, and go in and pretend to be inspectors, government inspectors, to look in the apartment and see how they were taking care of it, so, or who was living there. So she's no
age. Trying to run blacks out. They were slumlords. And I understand that. But see, my thing is, you're trying to hold them hostage for his past, you're going to dredge up her past and try to hold her hostage so you can make them sell a team. I don't see that happening. Because this is a matter of record. They knew this long before they brought this in the open to anybody else. This is on record. This is already out there.
You know what? And we will see in the coming weeks. We're down the last 3 minutes. We'll see in the coming weeks, but it is my prediction that this thing will be tied up in court for a long time, and he will probably not lose his team in this lifetime. I'm just going to put that out there. We will see. We will definitely see. Listen, yeah, we thank you so much for tuning in tonight. AJ, I enjoyed our conversation talking about the girls and talking about Emily's abortion video, and also talking about the update on Donald Sterling, you know, and we'll see in the coming weeks what happens with that. Listen, y'all, we're here each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central. Christopher is absent tonight. I think he'll be back with us on the 23rd. He is wrapping up his military tour, and he's going to be back with us on the 23rd, I understand. So out there to Christopher, let him know we miss him. And we'll see him on the 23rd. Also, y'all, like I said, we're here each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central. This is what we're doing. We don't do just one story anymore because it's so much news breaking. I think we break more news in a month now than we used to break in 10 years. It's just so much stuff going on. And so we can't limit it to just one hot topic a week. We've got to try to get in as many as we can or subjects.
One thing I want to throw in there right quick before you go. Mm-hmm. One thing. There was a lady in Stephensville, Texas, that was getting out of the car, and she was actually finna get her baby out of the car. She was attacked by this other woman that took the baby and ran off down the street.
No.
Yeah.
What happened?
A two-month-old baby.
So the baby's still going?
They had Stephenville on lockdown trying to find her because she took off running. They don't know if she ran around the corner somewhere, got in the car. They don't know what happened. But the two-month-old baby is gone. No.
Did she know the woman?
She was just getting out of the car. She was attacked by a strange woman that took her baby and ran off.
Wow. And I've been to Stephenville, you know, listen, that's not the kind of town that kind of stuff happens at. I mean, it's a real, it's one of those kind of towns, y'all, where, let's just say in Stephenville, they still got a section of the city in which they call Nick. Okay, so it's that kind of town. So I'm just very surprised that something like that would go down in Stephenville. No, I hadn't heard about that at AJ at all. Also, listen, y'all, I've got a daily affirmation now, and I say I'm going to close every show with this because I think it speaks to who I am, it speaks to my thinking, and I'm just going to share it with y'all. Maybe y'all feel the same way. And it goes something like this. It says, I am loved, called, and chosen. I am rich in every way and generous on every occasion. I am anointed, appointed, equipped, and enabled by the power of God that works mightily within me. No weapon formed against me will prosper, and no enemy scheme against me will succeed. I live, breathe, and serve powerfully under the shelter of the Most High God. Love that. Okay, y'all, listen, we got to get out of here. Enjoyed hanging out with you this week. We'll see you next Friday. Bye-bye.